music from Alison Krauss of the Cox Family, Walk All Over God's Heaven. Before that, a brand new Christmas song from Daniel Newland is his name, and it's The Reason for the Manger. And it turns out the reason for the manger is the cross. Quite a piece of music there. It is 11 and a half minutes after the hour, and we're joined now by the Reverend Dr. John DeLancey, who is all dressed up, suit and tie and everything, in Glenshaw, Pennsylvania this morning. John, good morning.
Good morning to you, Jim.
John leads Biblical Israel tours, and he's just back from Israel, where you were gone for 2 weeks, and we missed you. What did you do for 2 weeks?
Well, this was a 15-day, pretty extensive trip. It started in Jordan, and of course it ended in Jerusalem. I have to save the best to last, as I always say, but yeah. It was a really good trip, and despite some of the tensions down south in Gaza, we felt no effect from that at all, and again, overall, a great trip.
How big was the group that you had this time?
This was small, only 15 people. Normally, they're about 30 or 40, but it was really ideal to travel. We blended right away from day one and really saw a lot of things, probably over 65 sites.
Now, you lead these tours, and there's got to be a big difference in the way you relate to the members of the tour between 15 and 40. Now, 15 is almost yeshiva size. That's almost a study group by itself, isn't it?
It really is. This one, probably the numbers were affected probably with mind with the economy and the election. We, of course, watched the elections from Petra, which was interesting. We all logged on to our computers and watched the results. I guess it would be early Wednesday morning for us, mm-hmm. when, of course, the results were tabulated for you guys back Tuesday night on the 6th. But it was interesting to watch American politics from the land of Jordan.
Did you get a feel for what they think, what they feel? I mean, was there a lot of attention paid to our election there in Jordan?
I guess somewhat. I think the Israelis were more in tune with what was going on than the Jordanians. But it's interesting to find out, especially like when talking to the Jordanian people, they almost all think that we were for Obama. Hmm. And it's just an interesting perspective where in Israel, most Israelis thought we were all for Romney.
You know, it's interesting because on this side of the pond, the last few days before the election, there was a lot of news about how the rest of the world was rooting for Obama to win. Mm-hmm. And there were people holding signs in Poland and all around Europe and in Asia, and it seemed like everybody out there was on the side of Barack Obama. And did you get any sense of partiality over there? I mean, what they would have preferred?
Again, most Arabs would think that we were for, and of course they were for Obama, mm-hmm. but Israel was mourning, actually, pretty big time Wednesday morning when they heard the results, because they don't think this will bode well for them at all.
And of course there's a whole lot of stress and strain out there right now, and we heard plenty about the Hamas rocket attacks from mm-hmm. Gaza, and a little bit about the potential, at least, massing of troops on the border. Maybe that actually happened. Though there was no invasion, and then the ceasefire that came into effect while you were still there, didn't it, or was that after you got back?
After we got back, the ceasefire was okay. Negotiated, and that's almost a laughable type of scenario as well, because this Egyptian Prime Minister Morsi, Muslim Brotherhood leader, was the one who supposedly brokered this ceasefire, but it's interesting what he said in Arabic the following day. And, of course, we only hear the English sound bites in terms of how he wants peace between Gaza and Israel. But the following day in Arabic, he's absolutely pro-Hamas and wants the full destruction of Israel.
My goodness.
So this is the character who supposedly brokered the ceasefire, and that all world leaders are applauding, including our own administration, for his ability to bring about this ceasefire.
It scares me a little bit here.
It's just amazing. Amazingly not how naive the world is, and even people who actually believe the news. We actually, on one of our walks in Jerusalem, we actually were walking towards Ben Yehuda, a very lively place, and this was This was our second last night. So already there was news about Israel being sending reservists down to Gaza. But we saw Christina Amanpour.
Yeah, the reporter for
CNN and ABC. Yeah. And she was there in front of the Jaffa Gate reporting that there was high tension in Jerusalem tonight. And we were looking at each other. We're going, I don't think so. And of course, just how that news is portrayed back to the States, it's just amazing how sensationalized it is as it's reported back.
You know, for all the media out there, internet and all the networks, and it seems to me like there are fewer and fewer people really gathering news, and they simply relay what they hear from a very few sources. And the net effect of all this media is we tend to be more and more isolated from the truth, don't we? Would you see it that way?
I think you're right. In terms of what we hear and what really is happening, it's just a remarkable difference. I mean, this was truth 30 years ago when I actually traveled with a TV crew up into the war in Lebanon in June 82. And there I actually was traveling with, you know, all the networks, of course, CNN and Fox, of course, weren't yet in existence, but just a matter of how they portrayed even the war back in Lebanon in 82 with what we were reporting as we represented CBN, the Christian Broadcast Network, just night and day difference in terms of the truth being told and the truth being either concealed or not told at all.
Well, in your opinion, in this day and age, then, is there an agenda on the part of the media or simply ignorance?
I think there certainly is an agenda, and especially when it relates to Israel. I just read something, an article by Rachel Hirschfield today from Israeli News in terms of how the PBS NewsHour, for instance, just was so biased against Israel in terms of their video coverage of people suffering in Gaza and women and children and old men. And no, absolutely no footage or interviewing of Israelis who, you know, for months and months have had literally thousands of rockets fall on them for the sole purpose of, you know, killing Israeli civilians. And of course, the slant or the bias, it's not even concealed anymore. I think it's just wide open and unfortunate. That it's always against Israel. The anti-Semitism of the world is certainly infiltrating big time into our news networks, in my opinion.
Well, it's interesting because my morning Bible reading right now is in Revelation. And I've long debated internally here, just within my own brain, is this prophetic to our times or isn't it? Because there's lots of argument that Revelation pertained to the time in which it was written, the late first century. The Apostle John wrote it when he was well advanced in age, and in fact wrote it at the request of his compatriots around Ephesus and in that area. And a lot of it may have applied to the Caesar at the time, or even back to Nero, depending upon when the book was precisely written. But then I know how God works, or at least it's apparent to me that a lot of things in Scripture apply not only to the contemporary times, but also in a larger scale, like a much bigger story to a future time. Or it may not even be in time. It's simply a larger scale story, a type, a form, a pattern that is also common to the upper regions, maybe even to heaven. You know, things that are performed in heaven are seen in different form here, smaller scale, more temporary in nature, but they teach us things that way. It's like looking through a telescope. So all this doesn't surprise me, and it really doesn't dismay me. What it suggests to me is that God's plan is in place and marching along quite nicely.
Yeah, I'm not dismayed at all either, even though Israel is certainly outnumbered. And there are certainly prophetic scholars who believe that the role of the rise of Islam, for instance, is certainly prophetic. There's an ex-Muslim Brotherhood terrorist named Walid Shobat. Your listeners can easily Google him. Very interesting perspective. He was a Palestinian, grew up in Bethlehem, actually, and moved to the States. And in 1993 or 1994, he became a Christian. So he sort of has an inside perspective on the rise of Islam, the rise of the Muslim Brotherhood, and he relates it to prophecy. And I think it's quite interesting of how even Islamic prophecy sort of over the centuries literally has stolen or tweaked Christian eschatology so that, for instance, the 12th Imam or the Mahdi, for instance, spelled M-A-H-D-I, Mahdi, sometimes it's pronounced, is no other than what the Bible calls the Antichrist. And to see the pieces of the puzzle sort of forming with what's going on in Turkey and now Egypt, I think it is actually prophetic, although, of course, we're not the only generation in the last 2,000 years who thought we were the last generation.
That's true. It's happened from time to time.
But it's interesting that from his perspective, looking at the rise of Islam, the Arab Spring, and all that's being said in Arabic, for instance, as it all points against Israel, I do think these are prophetic times, and I think we have actually entered into yet another chapter. We don't know if it's the final chapter, but at least another new chapter in biblical prophecy.
Now, what is his name again? Because I'd like to put a link. When we post our conversation today on our audio archives page, I can put a link there to this gentleman. What is his name again? Can they spell it for me?
Yeah, Walid. It's spelled, actually in English, W-A-L-I-D, and Shubat, just like Shu and then B-A-T.
Okay.
I'll just see if I can go to his site now. He has all kinds of videos on YouTube and so forth, but yeah, that's it.
Okay.
WalidShubat.com. There it is. Former PLO activist and now a critic of Islam and certainly a prophetic scholar. Not everything I agree with in terms of his layout of, you know, the prophetic timetable, but certainly it's very compelling as to what he argues today as to the rise of Islam as it relates to, you know, modern day Israel today.
Well, as you know, we try to keep an open mind here, and you don't need to agree with everything he says, but I think it would be of great interest to our listeners. So I'll put that link in the post today when we get it up there on the audio archive. Archaeologically, what'd you find? Any new discoveries? What kind of work's going on over there right now?
Well, we had a great time. One of the new exciting finds is a place called Magda or Magdala. It preserves the first century city on the northwest corner of the Sea of Galilee. We could not take pictures of the new excavation, but it is a current excavation. We were there at the site. We sort of felt like we wanted to jump the fence, but we did not do that. There's a first century synagogue there, which is amazing because this is only the seventh one in all of Israel dating to the time of Christ. And even though Magdala is not mentioned specifically as a city in the New Testament, there is no doubt that Jesus taught from this synagogue and was well acquainted with this Magdala city.
And I imagine that Mary Magdalene, I mean, that's what the name means, that she was from Magdala, apparently, right?
Would you guess that?
Okay.
Also very impressive is the harbor of Magdala. This was a place that was known for how they preserved fish with salt. So you can almost see a little boy with two fish and, you know, preserved, and off he goes. And Jesus and the feeding of the 5,000. A lot of stories relate to this corner of the Sea of Galilee, but you can actually see where the ancient harbor was. And of course, today it's about 100 yards from the shoreline today, which of course means that the water of the level of the Sea of Galilee was broader and of course larger than it is today. But very interesting to see this excavation in progress.
Now, we've talked about, kind of speculated upon the site for the feeding of the 5,000. Is there reason to believe it was near Magdala?
Well, I think the text in John gives us a hint that it was near Bethsaida, which is actually on the northeast corner. But maybe fish in this region were at least preserved here through the business, the commerce, the commercial business of this site, but Bethsaida seems to be the location of the feeding of the 5,000. And of course, that's, again, on the, not the quite opposite side, but the northeastern corner versus the northwestern corner of the Sea of Galilee.
Now, you say you saved the best for last. Did you end up in Jerusalem?
Yeah, we did. And we did our normal sites. We saw the City of David, where I excavated 30 years ago, walked through Hezekiah's tunnel. We walked through this new drainage channel. We did not see this new this new discovery of the first century cistern. I think we talked about that.
Yeah, we did. We did, yeah.
But we did walk all the way through this drainage channel, and we're just amazed of how much progress they're making in this current excavation as well. They're exposing just huge Herodian stones. Some of them are non-dressed. Herodian stones typically had a little border around the facade or the outside part that would be visible to people. But underneath what is called Robinson's Arch, the foundations of the temple that Herod built in this drainage channel, it's just amazing of how they even placed huge, massive stones that far below the level of the ground today just to fortify this corner of the temple.
You know, what's interesting to me is why we can't figure it out. I mean, here we are with all this education and all this technology. We have evidence of what they did, but yet cannot go back and say with any certainty, this is how it was done. It would seem like that would be just a simple logical deduction based upon the tools they had. I think maybe we underestimate those folks.
Their engineering feats were just amazing. And just to, you know, even 700 years prior to Herod, just the engineering feat of Hezekiah's tunnel. I just read from Isaiah, too. Not only does 2 Kings 20 and 2 Chronicles 32 mention this water tunnel that was used to bring water to the inside of the city, but even Isaiah mentions it and just how they did that. 1,720 feet long and meeting in the middle, the inscription tells us. It's just amazing to lead people through that experience where we can actually see the middle area where they met. The chisel marks go one way, and then on the other side of where they met, the chisel marks go the other way. So you can actually see exactly the point where they heard each other's axes and picks, and they finally broke through. So it's always enjoyable for me to lead people through you know, first-time experiences such as this.
Well, and not many people get a chance to look back and to be so close to the things of antiquity as people in your tours. And I know your tours are led specifically with the flavor of archaeology predominant, because that's your love. And what a wonderful experience. But I think we give them not enough credit. We should look back and honor our ancestors and respect them and maybe elevate our whole opinion of who they are, how they thought, what they accomplished, because indeed we're standing on the shoulders, and we unfortunately tend to underestimate them. So what's next for you? You got several tours next year, don't you?
Yeah, I have a bunch. Greece and Turkey is scheduled for March.
Oh, that'd be exciting.
Israel, and then with an option to Jordan in April, and then certainly June and July for Israel, October and November for Israel, maybe even May. So some groups are contacting me from really all over the world. So we're just trying to put together some trips for individual churches and study groups, and it's pretty exciting. I'm not sure exactly how this new current, you know, political situation with Gaza will play out, but our president of our company is actually there now, and tourism, even last week, every plane landed safely, every tour is going on just as planned, so it really is still happening with tourism and how people are indeed seeing the Bible come alive as they experience Israel firsthand.
Well, we're glad to have you back safe and sound, and it sounds like the tour was a wonderful success. If you'd like to learn more about Biblical Israel Tours, you can visit their website. It's biblicalisraeltours.com, and the site is hosted by John, and you can link to it from our website, brokenroadradio.com. Just a click we'll get you over there, and you can learn a lot more about Biblical Israel Tours at their website. And John, you've got a book. How's the book doing?
The book is still there. It's still of interest to people. Some study groups are interested in purchasing it. It's also in digital form through, I guess, through Amazon or...
So you could download it as an ebook then, huh?
That's correct. So okay. That's the way to go for some people today who have many books on their iPad or their Kindle. So it's also available in that form.
I'm kind of leaning that way myself. Now, I don't have a reader, but I'm thinking of one. Maybe I'll get one for Christmas if I drop enough hints here. I'd like that. Because the ebooks are typically, what, $5, $6? Some of them free. I understand they're ebook libraries where you can actually borrow books out there. So maybe it in fact is the way. There's something nice about holding that book in your hand, though. And you can find out more about it at John's website. It's a daily devotional that combines archaeological sites with your daily devotion. So it's really a fresh approach to both archaeology and to a daily devotional. So check it out at biblicalisraeltours.com. John, thanks so much for joining us today. We'll look forward to a conversation with you next Tuesday, getting into the Christmas season here. Maybe we can talk about some of the aspects of the Advent and Scripture and archaeology. So,
great idea.
Well, be blessed, and we'll talk to you again next week. Music on this Broken Road Radio, Tuesday morning from Bradley Soash at the piano.